Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. Your friends in horror since 2013. I am one of your hosts. My name is Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is...
Billy Crash, since 2013 as well. 13's a prevalent number tonight.
It's like being married for 6 years in podcast form.
Okay. Well, then this is a great relationship compared to other marriages I've been involved in.
You know, I think these long-distance Skype relationships really are the best, Bill.
I feel so loved!
Don't tell my girlfriend I said that, though.
She doesn't listen to the show, so it doesn't matter.
But in any case, Bill, I thought I would lead with a riddle tonight.
Ooh, riddle me this, Bat. Riddle me this, fucking shit, bat numb. That was just awful. Don't
Holy
worry, I'll edit
lines,
that out.
Batman.
Way to butcher it, man. Take two.
The riddle is, we're big fans of horror, and as you know, horror is notorious for sequelizing the hell out of a successful premise. Now, Billy, can you name a series of movies within or without the horror genre that have been going strong for 13 entries straight and maintained such a high quality standard?
This is outside of, because you're not talking about Friday the 13th.
No, Bill, I'm talking about our 13th hodgepodge of horror show.
April Fools.
There we go.
I need a drink.
And have a gimlet with lime, Bill.
Yes, a gimlet.
Well, in any case, this is the show where we get together and talk about a couple movies at random, or, you know, maybe like Billy is going to talk about the last five he saw in the horror genre. But we don't discuss what we're going to talk about beforehand, so it's a surprise to each person. These shows tend to be pretty popular with our listeners. I feel like we get the most feedback when we just throw a bunch of movies at them and they don't quite know what's coming next. So our gift to you, dear listener, is another hodgepodge of horror episode.
Nice.
So Billy, that nice. Being said, simple enough setup. Would you like to lead? Is there anything you would like to talk about?
Well, I want to lead with the first one. It was a movie, a horror movie, obviously, that I recently saw in theaters. And when it was over, I don't know if you read about this in the papers, Johnny, but I was at the theater where everybody, just about like 90% of the audience, needed to be taken away in ambulances.
Okay.
And I was one of them because we tripped over so many fucking plot holes that we were injured.
For a second, Bill, I thought you were going to say they got into some bad cosmetics and had a Joker smile. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, the movie is Us. And, you know, Johnny and I talked about Get Out. We loved it. We loved the themes. We loved the execution of those themes. Mm-hmm. And in this film, we have the themes, but the worst third-rate, hackneyed, pathetic, trite, weak execution of those themes that imaginable. It was as if Jordan Peele was rushed by the studios and rushed by the hype of from Get Out to like get this out quickly. And it was as if he was working on a first draft and like, yeah, let's film it. And that was a big mistake. The cinematography's great. Acting's great. The story is so loaded with just crazy, bonkers in idiocy. I was like, what? People were laughing in all the wrong places.
And you know, Bill,
I'm sorry. That just really bothered me. And it's funny because I heard from another person in our Twitterverse who's he escapes me right now. He was in Florida watching. He said the same thing was happening. People were laughing when they shouldn't have been. And I think that's why Jordan Peele put out his little line, Us is a horror film, on Twitter.
You know, Bill, I think I think my problem with Us, and I didn't like it either, and I know we are not trying to make us martyrs here, but we are kind of voices in the wilderness with this one. There was a lot of thematic or potential thematic richness in this film.
Mm-hmm.
It was so fucking loaded that it was like, it was essentially turning me into a hunchback while I watched it, because I was being weighted down by all of this stuff. Okay, fine, all of these themes, and I kind of allude to some of them in my review on the
yes,
website, because I didn't want to spoil anything, but it's like all of this stuff, and I was like, okay, well, there was just too much of it. And I'm not denying your points about how there's beautiful photography.
Mm-hmm.
The score was aces, I thought. Very strange, very bizarre, very jarring, but I thought it worked. But there was just so much going on thematically. It did not feel focused in the way that Get Out felt focused and streamlined. And that was really my major point of contention with this one, because he seemed to be trying to please too many people, and it seemed like you said, everything felt rushed.
Totally rushed.
A lot of interesting ideas. You know, some movies can be a fantastic mess, and I can still find stuff to pick out and like about them. And there is stuff, like I said, that I liked about Us. But then, you know, I think to myself back on those good moments or those really poignant moments, and then I'm like, am I really going to watch this again?
Never.
to weed through this shit, because
yes.
he didn't do his job.
Yes, that's true.
You know, I feel like he should have like stripped out some of that stuff and just, you know, made it more efficient. I think there would have been ways to do it, but I was just
I agree. It wasn't well thought out. It wasn't well planned out. It wasn't plotted out. And normally something well plotted out can seem stiff and all, but he didn't do that with Get Out. He created something that was really almost magical in regard to what he did with imagery and such. This one, it was just so ridiculous. It was painful. It was painful to watch, and there's things I can't talk about because it's like, you know.
Of course, yeah.
But I would love to, like, maybe in a year, like, revisit it and go, all right, if you haven't seen Us by now, the hell with you. You know, like, but, you know, I think a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, yeah, that was smart. That was really great. And it's like, I think they're saying it because they think they need to say it. And that's wrong. And I think we have that a lot in horror.
Well, and I think here's the other thing, Bill. You know, we mentioned how Get Out was such a good movie, but it was also a huge unexpected success, kind of in the winter dead zone. I don't think anybody expected the film to do as well as it did. Even though horror tends to do like nominally well during those kind of off-season months where there's no event movies coming out.
Sure.
But yeah, I think there's also the thing of, well, Get Out was so good. We loved Get Out. We really, really want to like this one.
Yeah, yeah, agreed.
So we're gonna give it a pass because, you know, we'll give it 3 out of 5 or 3.5 out of 5 because, you know, Jordan Peele and that, you know, he's stumbling a bit, but it's still a good movie because Jordan Peele. So I'm kind of, you know, and I've done that myself because there's directors out there who I've followed their careers, and you know, every movie that they make I want to jump into and I want to love it, and I'm sure I've sort of written the same passes for other filmmakers as well. But with this one, it was just, there was just such a lack of focus. The whole Hands Across America thing, all I could think about was that episode of The Simpsons where they're mourning the loss of their precious TV, and Homer's like thinking of all the good times they had, and one of the good times was him sitting on the couch drinking a beer watching the Hands Across America thing while everybody was standing in front of him holding hands. That was all I could think about,
dude. I took part in that with a friend of mine, man.
Oh really?
Yeah, I was wearing I remember the shirt. I was wearing a Better Dead Than Red anti-communist t-shirt.
How ironic that Red plays a major role in that movie too.
Yeah, well, it was going along with the images that they had used. They had Red, body images and all. But I wonder who made all those outfits. But anyway, I'm not getting involved. But with Get Out, it was interesting. People were screaming at the screen for the character to get up, move it. They was like, they cared about the character, character. They wanted him to live and fight and kill and all this stuff. I did it too. And in this movie, people were standing up going, why is she doing that? That's stupid. Drive the car. What are you doing getting out of the car? What is going on? People were really upset by the tropes, the trope abuse. And rightfully so. It was it was so poorly done. It was embarrassing. I was embarrassed for Jordan Peele.
Well, and there was the thing, Bill. I felt like it was kind of lurching from one type of movie to the next. And it just... And that was kind of testifying to me the lack of focus on display. I mean, some people have made cases for why it goes where it goes. And I mean, I'm sure... These are great. I'm sure they're great, interesting reads. But I'm just I'm so over it at this point because... it really felt like, okay, we're making this, okay, let's start it off as a home invasion flick. Oh, that didn't work. Let's throw something else at the screen and hope it sticks,
Yeah.
And then it just kind of kept ambling and wandering. And I just was kind of where is this going? And I was saying in my review, it felt overwritten. There was just too much going on in this movie.
Yeah, there was, and like I said, it was just a rough draft. It's like, oh man, I got all my ideas down. You don't shoot that. You go back. You take time with it, man. You edit it. You have other people look at it. You do live table reads. You think geez, is this story going to make sense or is it going to be really stupid? And you didn't do that.
Yeah, and I was, I will say this, Bill, is possibly a redemptive thing. I have watched the first two episodes of the new Twilight Zone, and I have enjoyed them. So
no, that's great. The first thing I thought when I'm in a theater is, oh my gosh, he just pulled M. Night Shyamalan.
Well, you're not the only one who was.
Oh, I know I'm not.
Too.
It was just automatic in my head, and I was so upset because I was upset when people were first laughing in the theater because I'm like, don't do this, man. Don't ruin the movie. And then they were right all along because I was just 30 seconds after that, the movie just went to this tailspin of idiocy. And I'm like, oh, forget it.
Yeah.
It was very disappointing. Yeah. I was just really I just sat there and I didn't just sit there for Get Out. When I left the theater with Get Out, I was shaking. And when I left this theater, it's like, get me a drink. Let's go to Banner's Hard Cider. How's that for a plug?
Oh man, you can't go wrong with Banters.
No, you cannot.
If Jordan Peele disappoints you, Banters never will.
Ooh, boom! There you go. So that's fine. That's my first one. I'm sorry.
Well, one more thing.
Sure, go ahead.
With Get Out, you were saying about how the reaction was, how you felt when you were walking out of the theater.
Oh yeah.
With this movie, when the third act rolled around, I was sitting there thinking, not only how is this going to end, but when is it going to end?
Yeah,
I just want it to be over with. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And it's a shame. It's a shame. Squandered opportunity.
I mean, there is an upswing to this. The fact that it's made so much money so far will probably finance, could theoretically finance a bunch more movies from Peele, who hopefully will give us something
far better.
A little more substantive, a little more focused next time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Bill. Well, my first movie is going back to 1988. And you know how much I love cats, right?
Meow.
Yeah. Let me pet your pussy, Bill.
Oh, please, Johnny. Rub me the right way.
This is a movie that was recently given a Blu-ray release, and it's called Uninvited, written and directed by Graydon Clark. It is a strange little movie about a cat who's being experimented on in a scientific facility, but there's some side effects in that the cat turns into a weird little monster, comes out of the cat's mouth and kills people.
Holy crap!
So anyway, we got Clu Gulager is in the cast, along with George Kennedy, the great George Kennedy.
Yeah, so this is the 1988 film.
Yes, it is.
I just watched the film from 1988, and so did another wonderful follower of ours.
Ah, it must have been a good
Charles
year.
Charles, yeah. Crazy.
But it's a really interesting movie. I didn't have high hopes for it. But it's kind of like an innocent throwback to creature features of like the 50s.
Nice.
Because the cat, you know, when the cat has the thing coming out of its mouth, it's obviously a puppet, you know, puppet head. But it's a really weird premise because these kids on spring break, they wind up accosted by like this gangster guy, and they wind up on his yacht, and they wind up going out to sea. For some reason, that doesn't really matter a whole lot because you know they're not going to make it to their destination. And there's this cat that they find that's escaped from the from the medical facility. And there's like, oh, it's like, oh, cute kitty, let's take it aboard the boat, which I find hilarious because cats hate water. So you have this cat wandering around a boat the whole time. And it was just a really, I really had a good time with it. It's the Blu-ray is from Vinegar Syndrome, and
nice.
I would say they have about a 30-70 success rate with me as far as how much I like some of the stuff they put out. Some of the stuff they put out is really terrible, but I had fun with this.
Good.
And it's, you know, and I'm kind of sensitive, and I guess I've gotten more sensitive as I've gotten older to, I guess, the treatment of animals, the handling of animals in movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think of, well, you know, you think of Cannibal Holocaust, and that's a whole other end of the spectrum.
Oh, man. Whoa, yeah.
But, you know, you think about something like a shout out to Good Times, Great Movies. They did a podcast on Cat's Eye. And I grew up really liking that movie because, you know, it's mm-hmm. Stephen King, and I like cats. And but, you know, Doug and Jamie were bringing up all this observations about how this, you know, this film is like the epitome of animal abuse and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that. Essentially a cat getting, you know, the cat's in so many ways getting kind of tormented and freaked out, you know, with the stuff that's going on in this movie. And it made me sort of, you know, consider things differently.
Right.
Whereas in this movie, you can kind of tell that the cat was not traumatized.
Right.
Like the way the scenes were shot, there was a, you know, there's maybe a close up of the cat walking through a room or just like darting out of a room or something like that. It's not like there are people like jumping up and down around it, freaking it out and stuff like that. So.
Oh man, that's wild. I gotta check that one out.
Yeah, it's a fun little creature feature, and like I said, it's actually pretty innocent for what it is, you know. It's very tasteful for what it is.
Well, since we're on creature feature kick, oddly enough, we're going back to the 1980s, but to 1982, the year of The Thing, and this is not The Thing.
It's Blade Runner, right, Bill?
No, it's Don Dohler's, written and directed by Night Beast.
Oh, okay.
And as soon as I saw this, I thought of our great friend Greg Palko at Palko Designs, because he keeps saying this. So you heard it now. Johnny and I have to do the show. He's been asking for like a year. You guys need to do a show on best worst horror movies.
He needs to come on for that one.
He does. He does. Yeah. We'll have him on. And we got to go to his place and look at all his cool shit and do it there. But
I'm going to do the 5-finger discount.
Anyway, Night Beast, I'm watching it, and just from the beginning, I'm like, this movie is just awful. It is absolutely awful, but it is funny as hell at being awful. And some of the actors in it know we're in an awful movie that our good friend Don is making for like $20. And the estimated budget was $42,000 in 1982. Holy crap. But anyway, I still can't believe it. I think it was more like $42. But it's just hilarious. There's bad acting. There's just bad everything. And it's just poorly executed. But it is just one of those where it's fun to watch, just like maybe not as fun as Plan 9 from Outer Space, but it's on that list, man.
Okay, nice.
And so if you're looking for something to just kick back, have some laughs with, maybe make a drinking game out of it, Night Beast, 1982.
Hey, Bill, you know, funny story. My friend Brian, who you met at Monster Mania, he gave me some belated birthday presents recently, and one of them was the movie Fiend from 1980, which is another Don Dohler movie.
Oh man,
it's still in the shrink wrap. I'm holding it right now, but I have not watched it yet. But it looks just from the images on the case, it just looks like exactly what you're talking about. Kind of movie. So
Johnny, unleash the fiend, man, unleash it.
I was thinking about watching it tonight, so I might do that now.
Oh, you have to now, man.
Yeah, I've heard that Don Dohler is kind of like, you know, one of those filmmakers. It's all extremely low budget stuff, but it's got spirit, you know. Well, you know what, Bill? I'm going to skip ahead now since you brought that one up, because I have something that's possibly comparable to that movie in terms of just like low budget regional filmmaking is concerned, where we had a lot of energy but not a lot of money. Have you heard of Invasion of the Blood Farmers, Bill?
Oh, wow. Invasion of the Blood Farmers. Let me check.
Okay.
The Blood Farmers, 1972.
Ed Adlam, the director.
Yeah, I did not know. I never know.
Well, it just came out recently on Blu-ray. Really nice edition, as usual, from Severin Films, and that's how I watched
Severin's, Severin's awesome.
They're one of my favorite. Yeah, they're one of my favorite boutique labels. They put out some sweet monthly. Each month I look forward to their new release announcements because it's usually something I want to get. So
yeah, they know what they're doing, man.
Yeah, but this is a really it's just an absurd little thing where the camera work is very bizarre, the reaction shots are bizarre. It has some of the I don't know, imagine a movie that uses day for night, and this one totally every night scene is like in broad daylight in this movie.
They didn't have the right filters.
Pretty much I'm going out for the night and it looks like it's the middle of the afternoon. Yeah.
Oh my god.
You know, it's actually as bad as that movie that MST3K favorites, The Side Hackers, which has a scene in a quarry that takes place in broad daylight, but it's supposed to be night. So
oh my god, that's just awful. That's so embarrassing.
Yeah, but it's just, again, it's like you got these obviously inexperienced actors who are just like giving it their all. There's a very flamboyant scientist in the film who reminded me a lot of Mr. Deltoid from A Clockwork Orange in the way he delivers his lines. Some very extreme nastiness, yes.
Oh, man.
But it's essentially a cult of druids trying to resurrect their, I guess, their deceased queen or whatever. There's all this weird psychedelic hippie imagery. Some of it reminded me of some of the imagery from Mandy last year.
Holy hell, man.
Yeah, there were some moments where I was thinking, did Panos Cosmatos look at... he probably did watch this movie before he made Mandy, so...
Yeah, maybe he did.
But it's like one of those 70s PG horror movies where there's a lot of violence and a lot of bloodshed. But it's all so ridiculous and over the top. But it's like I kind of just watched it with my jaw dropped and I really enjoyed it. You'll be intrigued to know, Bill, that I think he was an assistant cameraman on this film, but Frederick Elms, who became a very renowned cinematographer who worked with David Lynch on Eraserhead and Blue Velvet, among other films, he participated in this film, and there's a really awkward like 5-minute interview on the Severin Blu-ray where he is essentially he's not really talking about the movie, but he seems really ashamed of it. So without coming right out and saying it, he pretty much says it. So
I love it, man.
I found it kind of amusing that he participated in that. So,
oh man, that's wild.
So check it out. You know who you are, Greg Palko. Check out Invasion of the Blood Farmers.
Yeah. And, Man, well, we're going to continue with the coolness, man, because I'm going to another creature feature, 1988, Unnameable.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, Jean-Paul Houllet, based on the H.P. Lovecraft story. And, you know, typical 80s music, 80s cinematography, college kids, blah, blah, blah. But it was cool. They had some cool characters, like the two, like, you know, leads and the guys, and things were pretty cool, but it got bogged down in the long-winded. It was like a date movie. It's like it got bogged down in, all right, let's have them walking through the house, the mysterious house, for like an hour. And, yeah. You know, like, and someone could be right downstairs, but they won't hear somebody screaming just, I don't know, just on a second floor. And it's, I hate that crap. I hate it. So, but the creature was cool. They had some really cool stuff in there. So it has merit. There's definite merit there. But, so if you want like a fun 80s throwback romp and maybe an 80s horror movie that you haven't seen, and especially if you're a Lovecraft fan, then you might want to check this one out. There was some cool stuff in there, some gore that was cool. They didn't go as far as they could have, because this creature, only keep, like, the selling point, I'm not even giving anything away, the selling point is, you know, she the unnameable monster loves to rip off limbs. There's no limb ripping. I didn't see anything. I didn't see any of that. But I did see some throat ripping. And at the time, they spent $350,000 on it. But maybe for a few dollars more, they would have gotten some even more insane things. You know, it's one of those things where, like, the big ending, and I'm not giving anything away, is like something that's like, well, why didn't they do this in the very beginning?
Okay.
It was one of those, but it was, it had a really cool feel to it. It's just that I wish the middle section of the movie, the second act, wasn't so drawn out.
You know, Bill, H.P. Lovecraft is one of those writers who tends to have a pretty hit or miss reputation when it comes to film adaptations. Like, sort of like Stephen King in the 1980s, his stuff, you know, the stuff that they put out of his work wasn't that great. So how do you compared to, say, From Beyond or Reanimator? I mean, Stuart Gordon has that distinctive, and Dennis Paoli have that distinctive way of adapting Lovecraft. Did this film remind you in any way of their work, or was this kind of taking a more straight-faced kind of route to the horror?
No, it wasn't straight-faced. There's like a little comedy nods here, and it's not that, you know, the director did a bad job in regard to that, because he's the one who penned the script as well based on the story. But I think with Stuart Gordon, you would have had a little bit more punch, and you would have had a little bit more money.
Okay.
And, you know, it falls into that same look and all as like From Beyond and such, you know, the colors and the lighting. At first, because I found it by accident on Amazon Prime, and they're mislabeling some of the movies with, because I saw Dead and Buried 2018, and I'm like, no, they didn't do a remake of that.
I hope not.
No, they didn't. And so this is 2018, so I'm watching it at first, and I'm like, is this a total throwback to the 80s movie? Like, how much did this cost? And then I'm like, nah, I don't think so. It just felt too legit. And then I checked real quick, and it's 1988. But I'm not a big reader of Lovecraft. I haven't been able to really get through much. But movie wise, it would be mid range. It's okay. Like they didn't go as far as they could have with this, but.
And you said it was a $350,000 budget in 1988?
Yep.
Holy shit.
Yep.
That just seems really low, really low even for 1988. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm kind of with you, Bill. I've tried reading Lovecraft. I've read a couple stories, but I have a hard time engaging with his stuff. And it's not the controversial reasons. It's just his writing style is just not very compatible with my mental processor, I guess you could say.
Sounds good to me, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, Bill, this is a recent movie, and maybe it's one to, I got to give a shout out to smartass A Fiend on Film, Dave K.
Nice.
For making me aware of this, because he posted about it a couple times on Facebook. And it's a movie called The Bad Man. Written and directed by Scott Shermer. And we know Scott Shermer because he did the film Found, which neither one of us really liked.
Yeah.
This is a vast improvement from him. It's essentially the tale of a young couple who I believe they've inherited. The girl's grandmother recently passed away. She owned a bed and breakfast, and I think they've inherited it. And they're trying to get her affairs in order after she passes, when they're visited by this mysterious, ingratiating guest who, you know, shares dinner with them one night, and he's a clown. That's his occupation, is he's a clown.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of fascinating. He gives us all this history of, you know, clowns as circus performers and you know, their function and role in society and in entertainment. And then, needless to say, like that night things take a turn, and the film really gets off and running down this very, very dark, very interesting path that I was very impressed by. I'm not going to really go into details about any of the plot, but it made me think of Eli Roth and the Hostel films. Now, before you say anything,
I'm not.
It is like Shermer did what Eli Roth tried and failed to do with the Hostel films, and he did it right, because there's stuff in this film about the and we could do a show about this, I think, the degradation and the commodification of humanity.
Whoa.
When you're essentially using human beings as, I don't know, what's the
objects?
Word? Objects, or what's the word? Chattel, or what's that word I'm thinking of? Something with a C. Chaff, is that what I'm thinking of?
Okay, yeah, okay.
Because the chaff is what gets thrown out, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm thinking, I'm like, you know, you're messing with my head, man.
I'm trying to be too eloquent here.
Yeah, just say it, Johnny. Just fucking say it.
But it's just like putting a price on a human life and seeing how much how much can a person endure, you know, at the hands of somebody. And it's really an interesting study of that. I really like the commentary, kind of. You know, it's very much on the surface in the way that it would be on a Romero film, but I thought the film was very well paced. It kept sort of springing a surprise on you, or, you know, the plot would diverge kind of in a way you don't expect. Mm-hmm. The acting is fantastic, considering a lot of these actors aren't really known.
Ellie Church has a bit of a name there.
She does, and, you know,
it's growing.
Yeah, and rightfully so, because I mentioned her on our last HodgePodge show. She starred in Amazon Hotbox as kind of like a cliched wicked warden type. And here she's playing like the total opposite of that, and she's fantastic.
Cool.
At playing like a quote-unquote normal person.
She's got range.
Yeah, so I really want to see more stuff with her, and I think she's a definite actress on the rise. So I think people should... check this out. You can I don't know if it's on VOD at the moment, but I know you can like buy a digital download for $5 off of Scott Shermer's site. A little aside, I received, when I first ordered The Bad Man on Blu-ray, I received it and the disc was actually defective. And I emailed Scott and told him that, and he was just very accommodating and very understanding, and
awesome.
You know, he sent me a replacement disc in the mail, and it played perfectly, so that was really cool too. So another reason to shop, you know, shop mm-hmm. local, you know, support your local indie filmmaker, because they're going to give you the go the extra mile for you in the way that Amazon won't. So
awesome.
NPSA.
Well, it's funny because you just slipped into a little bit of weirdness, so I'm going to as well, oddly enough. It just worked out that way. it's a movie I'd heard about, but I put it off, and I decided, screw this, man, I want to see it, and I'm glad I did, because I gave it 4 stars.
Wow.
And that is 2013's. It was it premiered in Japan in 2014, and it was big at Sundance before that. Randy Moore, he wrote and directed Escape from Tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
You hated it?
No, you know, man, Bill, it's been, it's probably, you know, I think it's ironic because I think I brought this up on one of our first Hodgepodge shows like back in 2013.
Really?
Yeah, I think I brought it up once on the show, but it's been years, so go ahead, have at it.
Oh, man. No, this movie's a blast. Guerrilla filmmaking at its best. I mean, this guy, oh, yeah. Just getting the DVD, you have to get the DVD just to get the behind the scenes. It's short. They didn't go as far as maybe they could have with certain things, but how many behind the scenes videos have features their lawyer, you know, it's like, it was like awesome.
Right
Oh my god, it was great. So the it's about a father and his family on vacation in Disneyland, and things are not, it might be a small world after all, but it doesn't have to be a happy one, and things go awry. It's a fantasy horror. There's some real weird stuff going on. There's cool stuff going on. I have no idea what the budget was for this damn movie, because shoot, it's never listed. I can't find it anywhere.
It's not on
Wikipedia. I got what it made, but I can't find a budget for it anywhere.
Sometimes Wikipedia has the budget.
Yeah, well, I'm not looking up now. But really cool, intriguing, definitely different. I'm not a fan of the mouse. I don't like it. I think it's an evil empire kind of thing, blah blah blah, all that crap.
Donuts. Yeah.
And it's like a vacuum cleaner for, like, you know, I don't know, for entertainment stuff. They stole my Winnie the Pooh, man. But anyway,
Disney ruined my childhood.
Yeah, something. Wow, that's great. Oh, that's a t-shirt right there. Get on it, Palco. No, but it was just really a cool trip, a great ride. They did wonderful things in there that make perfect sense. I think right from the beginning, it's like, well, why did they shoot it this way when it's Disney and it's so bright and colorful? And it's like, I think you'll get it pretty quick unless you have really a lot of issues and need to go back to school or some shit. But great acting. The cinematography was fantastic for this. Some of the shots are absolutely gorgeous, which was great because they would rehearse in the hotel room. Then they would go into the park, shoot their stuff. And, of course, the director couldn't be around. The crew couldn't be around. It was just the cinematographer, who Lucas Lee Graham, who had to tell Randy Moore, it's like, yeah, we got the shot. And Randy Moore would go, are you sure? Yeah, trust me, I got it. And it was like, that was it. And it was great because what I remember, Lucas Lee Graham was like, he was being told about the story. Yeah, I went to Disneyland as a kid. Now I went there, took my family back, and it was completely different. So I want to do this movie on it. And he's like, okay, whatever. How'd you get the rights to this? Oh, no, we're gonna be thieves, man. Okay, I'll do it. You know, it's one of those deals. So I thought it was really cool, unique. I love it. I got to get it. I don't know if it's on Blu-ray, but I have to get it on Blu-ray.
I know it's at least on DVD. Yeah, Bill, I haven't watched it in years, but it is it's just very bizarre, in a good way.
In a good way, yep.
And I kind of love the fact that they were stealing shots at Disney. That's just so awesome.
Yeah, and it's like there's Mickey Mouse. It's like, how, and all I'm thinking as I'm watching this is, how the fuck did they get the rights to this? And then they do their thing, and then it's like they introduce, like, here's our lawyer. And their lawyer was just he was like the man. It was like, you know, the devil versus Daniel Webster, you know. It's like, you know, and he was Daniel Webster. Well, I like to deal with large corporations because those lawyers are seasoned and I know I can have a conversation with them. And it was just like, this is the guy. He's like so unassuming and he's like a freaking superhero. It's fantastic. It's just fantastic.
And it's really a bit of a genre bender too. In some ways there's a little bit of maybe the lore going through it because that film also, that was a musical, it was a comedy drama, it was a horror film. Folklore, this film also like incorporates kind of weird Rod Serling-esque kind of feel to it, partially in the way it's shot and then partially in some of the ways that the story goes as the film progresses. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Good pick, Bill.
All right, man.
So how many more are we doing?
I think we're just doing five like we normally do, right?
Okay. So you did four counting us.
Yep.
Okay. So I get two or one more.
Well, you did Uninvited, Invasion of Blood Farmers.
So I've done
The five. Bad Man. Yeah, so this is your fourth, and you're going to close it out because I began this train wreck.
Okay, so I'll do this one, and then we'll... Okay. Maybe to conclude... This is a film that was a gap in my horror viewing history for a long time. And in part it's because I am not a fan of the director's most well-known movie, and other people absolutely love it. The movie that I'm going to mention is Frankenhooker from 1990.
Yes!
Shout out to my friend Phil, who was cleaning out his storage unit of DVDs and getting rid of stuff and asking if anybody wanted anything on Facebook. And I was like, oh, I saw Frankenhooker. So I was like, okay, I'll throw you a couple bucks. I've never seen it. I should see it about time. So,
you lucky bastard.
So, yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect with this because I am not a fan of Basket Case, or at least I wasn't when I first saw it. And that was a long time ago, so maybe I should give it another look. But this is Frank Henenlotter. It's an interesting retelling of the Frankenstein or Bride of Frankenstein tale. After a horrible birthday/lawn mowing accident in the opening scene, Jeffrey, played by James Lawrence, loses his girlfriend, Elizabeth, played by the great Patty Mullen.
Oh, she's awesome, man.
Oh, my God, yes.
And James Lorenz, he's just...
You know what, Bill? After I watched the movie, I was like, he is as good as Colin Clive in the James Whale Frankenstein movies.
Wow.
His degree of obsession and kind of weird, he's more off than Colin Clive, because obviously it's kind of, the movie's a little bit loopy in that way. It's playing everything up a bit more.
Yeah.
But I thought, like, in the scenes where he's like talking and stuff like that to himself, I was like, you really get a feel for his degree of obsession and kind of the depth of his despair and kind of his desire to do this seemingly impossible thing, but he doesn't lose hope that he can do it.
Yeah, it was almost an extension of his role in Street Trash to a degree.
Oh, fuck, that's another one I haven't watched in a long time.
Oh, I love it, man.
Yeah, another, yeah.
Anyway.
But, yeah, I was just kind of like, after the opening scene, I didn't really care for the jokiness of the lawnmower accident, because I thought Henenlotter was laying it on a bit thick, like with the newscaster who's making all these like off-color jokes in the report. I was like, nah, I don't need this. This would have been funnier if you'd done it a different way.
Exactly.
But yeah, once it settles into Jeffrey's story and how he's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get only the... I'm going to... pay some of the finest hookers and feed them some super crack so I can separate them from their most noteworthy limbs so I can rebuild my girlfriend, basically.
Oh, man.
Which leads to this hilarious scene in a flophouse bedroom, which, if you haven't seen it, I'm not gonna spoil it, but it is so hysterical.
Yes.
It's just so fucking over the top and amazing to watch. But of course, true to the title, Elizabeth comes back. And I got to say, this is like, it is an entrance that is on par with Elsa Lanchester as the Bride of Frankenstein. It is so brilliant, so visually compelling that you're just kind of taken aback, but you start laughing right away because she's her first line, want a date, got any money? It's like, I fucking lost it.
Oh, I know, man, I know.
But the physical performance of Patty Mullen in this film is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there is a lot of funny stuff going on in here, a lot of like sort of physical and slapstick humor that's taken place.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the performance itself is really fantastic, and you can tell she invested a lot into creating this distinctive character, like from the lip twitching and the like awkward shuffle that she has and everything. It's just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. She's great, man. She just killed it.
Yeah, I really was taken aback by how much I liked the movie. And the
I
guy
knew you would.
Yeah, I was like, the guy who plays the pimp is fucking hilarious too. I can't, like, again, it's like another physical performance. He's like this totally roided out guy with muscles on top of muscles, and he's just, his dialogue is so funny. I was just kind of like really impressed with it. And you know, Bill, I watched Bride of Frankenstein for the first time really recently, within the past couple of months.
Damn.
And you know, what do you think of Bride of Frankenstein?
I have to watch it again. I haven't seen it in over 30 years.
Okay, fair enough. You know, I watched it and I was kind of, there was some stuff I really liked about it, but then there was other stuff that just annoyed the piss out of me about that movie. And I understand some of it was of the time, but they really put a lot of what I thought unnecessary humor into that film.
Mm.
And it bugged me because you would have some really compelling, serious stuff like Boris Karloff with the blind man
in
the forest, which was very compelling. But then you would go back to the annoying Una O'Connor, who was the shrill peasant woman who would always be screaming and like lifting her dress up and running away from stuff. You know, that stuff pissed me off, where I was like, with Frankenhooker, at least that humor is really organic to the story, and I like that.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, blasphemous hot take here, but I felt like this was a better movie than The Bride of Frankenstein, you know, in a lot of ways, because it's...
People are going to kill you, Johnny, just for saying.
let them get their torches and pitchforks and chase me down. Let them do that, you know.
Oh, man. I was never a fan of the Frankenstein mythos, to be honest. Shelley's book, it's like, she had a great idea and all. I think she wrote it when she was like 17, and it's like... And you're reading it, you could tell it's written by a teenager, and it's like, this needed an editor, you know? But but some of the elements in there are really wonderful, but that were never really explored. I mean, the Frankenstein and mythos and monster that we know of today comes from those
James
early from those early Universal films, which are far removed from the actual original tale. And if you want to see that, you have to go to the Frankenstein film with Robert De Niro to get a better idea of the actual novel made into a movie.
Well, you know, Bill, there was also a version made for TNT back in the early 90s with Patrick Bergen and Randy Quaid, which I also heard was a little closer to the book. But you're right, though, the novel is very much how would I describe it? It's much more philosophical. It's less action based. Than the movies, you know, were kind of turned into. But I also wanted to mention that this coming Labor Day weekend, there's going to be an inaugural horror convention taking place down in Gettysburg called Creature Feature Weekend, and I'm actually kind of looking forward to going because Patty Mullen is scheduled to be one of the guests.
No shit.
Yeah, along with Greta Garetta, who I'd also like to meet.
Oh.
And yeah, I think they're still announcing people, but it's understandably I think it's going to be a bit small scale because it's their first one. But I'm kind of, you know, if you're in the central PA area and you're interested in giving a fledgling festival some support, I think you can buy tickets right now online. So I'm thinking about checking it out.
Yeah, what is it again, Johnny?
It's called Creature Feature Weekend, and they do have a Facebook page if you want to look them up.
Creature Feature Weekend. And when is this weekend again, Johnny?
It's Labor Day weekend, so whatever weekend Labor Day falls on, it'd be Friday through Sunday, I think. Yeah, you could come down for it.
Oh, well, thanks for inviting me, Johnny, motherfucker.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to, but you seem kind of interested, so, you know.
See Patty Mullen and Greta Garetta? Damn.
You know, I had the chance to meet Greta at Horrifying Weekend, which is now no more, but I think I told the story about my encounter with Greta, but I didn't get an autograph or a photo or anything, and I'd like to change that. So
damn straight, man.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, on that Franken note.
Got any money?
Sorry if I'm being malicious, but oh my gosh, that's the movie I'm talking about now. 2018 film. It was one of the ones I've been passing by for a long time because it's like a young college professor and his pregnant wife unwittingly release a malevolent entity with murderous intentions. And it's like, eh! But then I was looking, and it's written and directed by Michael Winnick. And I was like, oh, Bojana Novakovic's in it. And I'm like, okay, I'm intrigued now. And it was an interesting movie that got me angry for certain reasons that I will unleash now. it was sad because it was one of those movies again where, you know, the cinematography by Felix Kramer was amazing, but it was too bright in the nighttime. Like, it was definitely dark, but like with the lighting, it was like, you need to keep it dark, man. You need to keep it scary. Not so dark where we're just here shit, but, you know, we need shadows. You know what I mean? You know, we need darkness. We need an abyss-like feel when we walk into a room, not like, oh, gee, all the lights are on, so, you know, it's not too bad. There were a lot of tropes in this movie that were abused and re-abused even, but there were some really cool elements that were actually could have been very disturbing for horror, which would have been great, but they didn't go far enough. And the ending, I was really surprised. I'm not going to tell you about the ending, obviously. I'm not even going to tell you about the damn story, but I was like, if they went into the dark realm with this thing, it would have been, this could have been a really powerful film that people would have been talking about. But when you have your character, and Josh Stewart, you know, he played his part, you know, as the husband. But, you know, like I said in the beginning, you know, a young college professor, he's a mathematician. He's, you know, he's Mr. Left Brain. He's Mr. Mm-hmm. Logic. But he's a one-note character that could only be in that one realm. So when weird shit's happening around him and his wife's like begging for help and he's seeing it, but he's like, no, nothing's happening, honey. And it's like, dude, what the fuck? You know, it's just like, you know, the movie could have been even more powerful early on if he had gotten on board early on. And it's like, just don't pull that trick where it's like, honey, something weird's going on. No, it isn't. It's just your imagination, darling. We've seen that a billion freaking times. Don't do that crap. And that's what he did. And he fell into that trope-filled trap. And it was very hackneyed. But like I said, the movie had disturbing elements. The ending, I was impressed with in certain ways from a storytelling standpoint in regard to the dark elements. But he didn't bring it home. It was like, instead of using like, instead of like, you know, taking a hammer and breaking down a wall, it was like he was using a toothpick and poking holes. And it was like, come on, man. Be real. This is a horror movie. Get in there. So.
Well, it sounds like that character had to act a certain way to stretch the stretch the story out or something, so you could fill in with those lazy tropes, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't seen any of his other films, so I don't know. But
You know what? I'll say this, because horror fans will recognize him from the two Collector movies. He's fine in those. The movies themselves, I don't think, are that good. Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Who are we talking about?
Josh Stewart.
Oh, Josh Stewart. No, Josh Stewart, I'm not worried about. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm the director.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Has he done anything? Has the director done anything else, Bill?
Yeah, he has, but I'm not really familiar with any of them. Directed Bloodland. I don't think that hasn't been released yet. Code of Honor, The Better Half, Guns, Girls, and Gambling, Deuces, Shadow Puppets. I'm like, what the fuck, man? I don't know.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So I don't. Yeah. So this was disappointing. It was like, you're not a horror guy. It definitely seems like you weren't. And I hate that. It's like, oh yeah. People love this. Fans will love. No, they won't, man. Just give us something that's either go dark, man, or and stay away from the tropes.
Well, you know, to go back to H.P. Lovecraft and Stuart Gordon and Dennis Paoli. Dennis Paoli, who was the writer on a bunch of those Gordon flicks, he said something in an interview once where he was like, if I'm not giving the audience at least one thing they haven't seen before, I'm not doing my job as a screenwriter. And that's mm-hmm. something I think about, and I'm sure you do too, Bill, an awful lot when, you know, you're going through the process of writing something, because it is all too easy to fall back on those tropes or those deus ex machina
crap, yeah,
to see you through things, because it's easy, you know.
Well, if I can't do it different, I don't do it at all. There's no point.
And I find myself, like, if I get to a point like that and I find myself inserting like a cliche line or a cliche action, I'm like, really, it feels like I'm sticking pins in my own voodoo doll, kind of. Wow. I'm like, oh, my hand, it hurts. It's gone numb all of a sudden. Yeah.
Johnny numb. Self-masochism. That's you sick bastard. I love it. So, Johnny, you're closing this out now, man. What's your final shot into this hodgepodge universe?
No, I do fuzzy math, so I thought I was done, but I'll do one more since you asked.
Well, we don't have to.
Well, I got one.
Shit, go ahead.
I'll be really quick. 1979's Giallo in Venice.
Oh, God.
What kind of film do you think it is, Bill?
A bad one.
It's actually really good. Not really good. It's good. But you know what?
Yeah, I didn't see this one.
It does take place, obviously, in Venice, and it made me want to live in Venice because it's so fucking beautiful. It's really beautifully shot, really sleazy movie. Some of the violence is particularly cringeworthy. Some of it's pretty cathartic when you find out who's getting killed at certain points. It's just a very weird film that has to do with you know, sort of those pulp tropes of, you know, the prostitute who has all the answers to the mystery, apparently.
Oh, brother.
The policeman who might be two steps behind and who is constantly eating eggs in this movie, and it's really obnoxious. Seriously, every scene this guy's in, he pulls an egg out of his shirt and he starts eating it, and I'm just like, God, I hate
the movie already. I hate it.
The thing is, you know, I wonder what the set was like, you know, filling up with egg farts, but that's just another story.
Oh,
but there's a killer on the loose in Venice, you know, and people are dying in all sorts of nasty ways. It definitely ups the sleaze quotient from directors like, you know, Bava and Argento, mm-hmm. who at the time, you know, they were making their own violent films, but there was a sort of a sheen of quote-unquote artistry and craftsmanship. This film is much more content to kind of wallow in filth, basically. So you might dig it, Bill. You know what it reminds me of? It would make a good double feature with Fulci's The New York Ripper, which is also extremely grimy and sleazy. How many stars, Bill? Half a star for that one.
I'm checking right now because I knew you were going to ask. How many did I give that? 1.5 stars, Johnny. Piece of shit.
You'd love it then. Come on. Jeez.
Fuck it. I'm sorry, man. I'm not sorry. It's crap. These movies are fucking... Keep going.
Well, it's a bit of a Scorpion releasing put out a Blu-ray recently, and sometimes their stuff kind of goes in and out of print, so you kind of got to keep an eye on the websites where it's up for sale. I think you can find copies still at Diabolik DVD if you're curious. I don't know where else you might find it. But it also features Mariangela Giordano, who is noteworthy for playing the mother in Burial Ground, who had the awful, hideous son who was played by an adult. If you like Burial Ground, if you like the New York Ripper, I would recommend Giallo in Venice. If you have that sleazy, you know, that sleazy side, you can embrace your sleazy side with this film, because it is plenty sleazy, and the sleaziness kept my attention the whole time. So I don't know what that says about me. Your mileage may vary, but I'd give it a 3 out of 5. It was not boring, and I loved looking at the Venice locations to the point where I would love to plan my next vacation, you know, as a trip to Venice. So
Jell-O in Venice. I mean, who wants to go to Venice to just have Jell-O?
Talking about Jell-O Biafra, Bill.
Bring it, man. Bring him.
Now it's time to talk about censorship.
That was awful.
I can't do a good Jell-O Biafra. I could probably sing it better than I could.
Oh my god.
Speak.
Oh my god.
This has been an episode of The Last Knock. Yeah. Nope. Don't like that one bit.
All right. We're going. I'm doing scream outs, man. I'm doing scream outs. We're going. First one we're screaming out to is the lovely Kim McDonald, who is on Twitter, Dixie Fairy. She's a hard junkie from Charleston, and you can check out her work on fairymusings.com. The phenomenal Denise Gossett and Company at Shriekfest Horror Film Festival. It's the 19th Annual Horror Sci-Fi Film Festival Screenplay Contest. It's going on now. Founded by... She truly is a lovely, lovely woman and beautiful and a great actress, Denise Gossett. Mm-hmm. It's the longest-running horror fest in Los Angeles, and it's the only bi-coastal horror fest, because they also are out of Orlando, Florida now. Go to shriekfest.com right now to learn more. It's fantastic, and if you're a finalist, don't go, I'll stay home. You better go, because it is amazing, it's wonderful, and Denise Gossett knows how to throw a party. Scream Radio.
Yeah.
And that's Scream without the... I always say without the E, but it's also without the A. I have no idea why
There are no vowels. Yes.
There's no vowels in Scream. And it's run by the phenomenal Tracy_TR. And it's a streaming radio dedicated to all things horror and more. And go to scrmscreamradio.com. Famous Monsters on Twitter. The first and finest sci-fi, fanzine, and horror pop culture fanzine created by Forrest J. Ackerman in 1958. Often imitated, never duplicated. And you could check out famousmonsters.com on their website. Don't miss it. It's always great stuff. Wonderful person, friend of the show. He's been on a couple times. Should be on a couple more. Thomas S. Flowers.
Yep.
And he is a fantastic horror writer, great family man, and we love him. He is the author of Scary Books. And to find out more of that, go to his really, really rock-solid website, thomasflowers.com, as well as amazon.com for his latest and greatest horror prose. Promote horror. Welcome to Promote Horror, where we bring creators of horror and horror fans together. Our goal is to help spread the horror through our promotions, and that they do every day, 24/7. Check them out on Twitter, and also go to promotehorror.com. Just a few more, Johnny. Dark Universe, what's that? Mm. That is D-U-H-D News on Twitter. Dark Universe, what does it equal? It equals Horror Database which is an active news and entertainment source for all of your horror needs. You could follow them on Facebook as well, also on Instagram. They're out of England, and also their website is du-hd.com. Dark Universe is awesome. Wonderful, wonderful fan of the show, a prolific writer. She was like not writing for a while, and now she's just exploding. And that is my sister from another mister, real Jilly G. She's the occasional writer and more. She's a lover of life, which that she is. She's a great photographer. I just want to go to Canada one day, just take pictures with her somewhere. And nice. Writing and reading. She's supports all things that are Canadian, cool, loves animals. She listens to our show, so she loves us too, so I'll take it. And check out her wonderful website. It's loaded, crimsonquintessence.com. You will not be disappointed. And the last remaining two, Film Qualia, Qualia. And this is a video essayist. So you can find Film Qualia on, on YouTube. And they're out of London, England. They don't disappoint either. Check them out. And finally, Ginger Nuts of Horror. And that is GN Horror on Twitter. It's UK's number one independent horror review website. And you could direct all review requests to their email. And go to their site at gingernutsofhorror.com. And they're out of the great city of Edinburgh, Scotland.
Nice.
So that's it, Johnny.
Billy, where can people find you?
Right here. I'm on CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show and more. And, of course, you can get this show on iTunes. Wonderful articles from Johnny Numb and Dixie Fairy, Kim McDonald, among others. And you could follow me on Twitter as Crash Palace. And I'm like, where am I? And also, what is it, Billy Crash? I'm fucking... Instagram. I'm somewhere, man. Yeah. Whatever.
And you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And per what Bill said, you can also find my writing at CrashPalaceProductions.com. I think that's the we've closed the door on another successful Hodgepodge show, Bill.
Hodgepodge 13, baby.
Here's to at least 13 more.
Oh, really?
Are we going to be around that long? I don't know.
Oh, my gosh, man. Dude, this is our 310th show.
Want a date? Got any hodgepodge?
Is that hodgepodge in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
I just want to watch Frankenhooker again. That's all I want to do.
See? And you waited all this damn time, you pinhead.
I need to rewatch A Basket Case now, too, because I might have been wrong about Frank Henenlotter.
I don't think you were really off about Basket Case. It's like, on one hand, I like it and I get it, and on the other hand, yeah, it's maybe overloved.
Okay, all right.
But anyway.
Frankenhooker, definite yes, though.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, buddy, have a great one, man.
All right, you too, Bill. See ya.
Bye.